When I was a young adult, me and my friends always wanted to create the best story. The stories that we'd look back and say, hey, remember when we did this? Like, remember the time that we ate 5 Grand Slam breakfasts in 8 hours? It started like this. We found out that Denny's on one day of the year was giving away free Grand Slam breakfasts between the hours of 6 a.m. and 2 p.m. So me and my friends looked up how many Denny's there were in our area. There were 5 in the greater Edmonton area at the time. So we went to the first one early in the morning. Now, for those of you who don't know, a Grand Slam breakfast has 2 eggs, 2 pieces of bacon, 2 sausage, and 2 pancakes. So 5 of these, you can multiply that. That's 10 of each of those things. At our first Denny's, we got there, we were excited, we were full of vigor, and we ate the breakfast pretty quickly, and we quickly moved on to the second Denny's. Now, the second Denny's was relatively close by, and we were definitely slower at this Denny's. We didn't have speed and excitement, but we were able to finish these pretty quickly. But things started to go downhill at the third Denny's, because we already had 2 full breakfasts, and we started to eat this food, and it really slowed down. We started to pick at the food a little bit, to talk. We tried to convince ourselves and motivate ourselves and push ourselves to be able to eat this, but really the hardest part was the pancakes. The eggs, the bacon, and the sausage all were pretty light and easy to eat, but the pancakes felt like loaves of bricks that we had to cut and eat, and it just kept filling and filling our stomach until there was no room left. But we were determined, and it got to a point where we were desperate. So at this third Denny's, each of us kept on eating until there was no room left in our stomach, and our body made sure that there was room in our stomach, each of us going to the bathroom to alleviate the pressure in our stomachs. So after we each did this in turn, after trying to fit as much in our mouth, we were able to finish at this Denny's. Then we went to our fourth Denny's. Now, the third Denny's obviously took a lot longer than we had hoped, and we were moving to our fourth Denny's, but we thought we still have lots of time to finish at this Denny's and then get to the last Denny's before 2 p.m. The fourth Denny's, the first problem was that the parking lot was full. So we had to park about 4 blocks away. We took this as an opportunity to just walk a little bit off from our stomachs, and we got to this Denny's. And then we realized that this Denny's was right beside a university at lunchtime, and they were giving away free breakfasts. There was a 45-minute wait to just get into the restaurant, and then we had to wait a long time for our food. So we came up with a plan. We still figured that we had a chance of getting to that last and fifth Denny's, but our car was still parked a ways away. So I would eat one of my pancakes and all of my food as soon as the food came to us, and then I would run to the car to pick it up while my friends ate all of their food, and then they split my last pancake. So this happened. I finished my food as fast as I could, which we had a little bit of time and a break to do this. And I ran those 4 blocks. Now, those were the hardest blocks I ever had to run in my life because I had now had about 4 Grand Slam breakfasts in about 7 hours. So I ran to my vehicle as my friends finished their food and then paid the little tip that we had to give them and then went to pick them up and drove to our last Denny's. Now, we didn't know how much traffic there would be, and we already had a lot of people at this previous Denny's, so we weren't sure how busy this last Denny's was going to be. So we drove to the fifth Denny's, and as we got there, we saw that it wasn't that busy, and we were able to sit down just in time to get our fifth free Grand Slam breakfast of the day. We leisurely picked away at our food as we basked in the glory of this great achievement that we had had in having 5 free Grand Slam breakfasts in one day. I remember driving home that day with the windows down, screaming as loud as we could to "We are the champions." It was a great moment and one I'll probably tell my grandchildren about. So, what happened the next year that we found out Denny's was giving away free Grand Slam breakfasts? Is we did it again. And yet the next time it wasn't that exciting. We kind of fixed some of the tweaks and some of the kinks in it, and it wasn't that exciting of a story to tell. But we still have that first time. the glory and the experience we're able to have as we finish these five Grand Slam breakfasts. Now, this is kind of a ridiculous story, I know, but we all do this in little ways in our lives, right? Is that we all try to kind of achieve these things in our lives. We kind of create a great story. We try to find meaning. We try to find purpose. We try to find the love and acceptance that we're searching for. Sometimes it's in little ways throughout our day, and other times it's in big ways that we're trying to achieve something that we long for. Some of us have that longing for meaning and purpose and achievement, and we're always wanting that next promotion or that next accolade, and no matter what we get, it's never enough. Some of us want security, and no matter how much money we have or what insurance we have, we never really feel completely safe. Other times, we're longing for the acceptance and love and belonging of others. And even though it was just our birthday where everybody encouraged us and lavished us with their time and energy and love, the next day we're still longing for more. Because time and time again, we can't get that deep longing that we're going for. That leads us to our big idea today, is that your deepest longings can't be achieved. They can only be received. This is what Jeremiah, a prophet who was talking to the ancient Israelites, was saying to his people. The people of Israel were constantly trying to achieve their longings for safety and security, but they kept on going to the wrong things. They kept on going to the wrong idols. So Jeremiah was trying to convince them to turn back to God. And we're going to look at that in Jeremiah 2, 5 to 13. This is what the Lord says. What fault did your ancestors find in me that they strayed so far from me? They followed worthless idols and became worthless themselves. They did not ask, where is the Lord who brought us up out of Egypt and led us through the barren wilderness, through a land of deserts and ravines, a land of drought and utter darkness, a land where no one travels and no one lives. I brought you up into a fertile land to eat its fruit and rich produce. But you came and defiled my land and made my inheritance detestable. The priests did not ask, where is the Lord? Those who deal with the law did not know me. The leaders rebelled against me. The prophets prophesied by Baal, following worthless idols. Therefore, I bring charges against you again, declares the Lord, and I'll bring charges against your children's children. Cross over to the coast of Cyprus and look. Send to Kedar and observe closely. See if there has ever been anything like this. Has a nation ever changed its gods? Yet they are not gods at all. But my people have exchanged their glorious God for worthless idols. Be appalled at this, you heavens, and shudder with great horror, declares the Lord. My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. Now, as we hear this, we can see some of the hypocrisy and kind of ridiculous things that the nation of Israel did. And you even hear in verse 12 how they're supposed to be appalled. Even the heavens are appalled at their behavior as they turn from how God delivered them from Egypt and gave them their own land and their promised land, and he cared for them and took care of them, and yet they rejected him. Now, I want to warn us from looking at the scriptures with condescending eyes and kind of sometimes having some pride in it, like, oh man, they're so ridiculous. How could they even do that? So I'm going to just kind of go a little bit more into their story and what their lives might have looked like. First of all, we kind of can think that they all saw the plagues and how God delivered them from Egypt and freed them from slavery. And while it's only like this far in our Bible apart, at this time, it was centuries, up to 1,000 years later, that Jeremiah is talking to his people. And they didn't all have Bibles on their shelves at that time. Writing was expensive and not many people could read. So it was only those who probably went to the temple that had actually heard the story read from the Bible. And maybe the story was told from person to person, but again, that can easily and quickly stop. And it did over centuries. So many of the Israelites might not have even known about how they were released from slavery, from God. It wasn't on the forefront of their minds. Now, these people were farmers. They could die if they didn't grow the crops that they needed. They didn't have welfare where they could get money if something failed, or they didn't have the social insurance and everything to hold them up. So it was important that it rained. It was really important that their lives were at stake. And these were real issues that they were facing every day. Not only that, is that there's enemies all around them that could come and kill and steal and take their daughters and wives away and enslave them. These were life and death issues that they faced every single day. So they tried to solve these problems and do what they could. For them, they went to idols. Now, don't be naive to think that these idols were just wooden pieces of wood, because idols had demonic forces with them. And demonic forces at least sometimes have power in this world. They can do things. So at least some of the time when they sacrificed these idols, probably they delivered. Or maybe they heard about somebody who sacrificed an idol, or they saw different nations prospering and having food and being safe from outside forces and all these things. So they would have seen this and wanted to actually have the same things happen to them. So they too would have sacrificed. They too would have gone to these idols, at least thinking that they would have delivered them from whatever hardship or evil they're facing in that moment. Now, I'm not saying that this is what they should have done, but this is what they did. And I'm saying this so that you too might see that you might make some of these same decisions that they did. Because we need God just as much as they do. And we make so many of the same mistakes that they did. But for us, it's often in a lot littler ways. For us, it's not life or death most of the time. It's in little things. For instance, when times are tough for you, and maybe you're not sure about finances, do you go to the Bible and memorize a Bible verse? Or do you look at what's happening in the economy and look at your bank account a couple times a day? Now, none of these things are bad, but it's what are you trusting in? Or when someone hurts you and you're feeling alone and desperate, do you go to social media to kind of get that jump of endorphins to feel liked? Or do you spend some time alone with God? Personally, I've had some minor theological crises when I've been woken up by my child in the middle of the night thinking, God, if you are good, why is this child not sleeping? We too turn from God in little ways that often we don't even notice. And again, we try to find ways to get out, ways to achieve our deepest longings, but time and again, they fail. So Jeremiah gives us this picture in verse 13, where he says, "My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water." So for them, water was important. As I said, they were farmers. There wasn't a lot of water in Israel. It's a dry place. So they needed water for their livestock, for their plants, for them to drink, to live on a regular basis. So they needed to get water in one way or another. Now, there was a couple ways to get water. One of them is if there was a spring nearby that would give fresh, clean water. But there wasn't always a spring nearby. So another way that they could get water was to dig a cistern. Now, you can see a picture of a cistern here. Basically, what a cistern is it's a hole that was dug for rainwater to wash into. And it would be in the rocks, it would be in a low place, so that when the rain wasn't coming, there would still be a pool of water that they could use to feed their crops or to feed their animals or to drink for their own livelihood. But cisterns could get dirty. Because if an animal fell in one of these cisterns and it died, then there'd be decomposing animal in one of these cisterns, and it would actually bring death instead of life to the people who would drink this water. Or sometimes the rainwater could even wash feces into the cistern, and then the water drinking would actually have the feces in it. So again, the cisterns could bring death and wouldn't bring life. But springs, They're always clean. They're always fresh. They're always abundant. So the people, Jeremiah says, is they had two sins. Now, there was lots of sins, but two broad categories. The first was that they forsook God. They abandoned God. They pulled away from God. And the second one was that they turned to cisterns, idols, broken cisterns. It's them choosing not to be with God, but instead to be with idols. This really hurts when it happens to us. Maybe you've had a friend before choose not to spend time with you and to choose to spend time with somebody else. And this can happen in little ways or in big ways. But for the people, for God, who had done so much for them, who had delivered them from slavery and given them a good place to live, and yet they chose to go to idols. And idols only demand more and offer less over time. Rather than choosing to go to God, you can only imagine the hurt and the wounds that this brings. But God is loving. They'd probably go to these cisterns, though. One of the reasons is because you can control them. As it says, that they could they were digging these cisterns. They were trying to make these cisterns happen where they wanted and when they wanted them. Because they weren't getting the results from God that they wanted. Or they weren't getting the results from God when they wanted. Maybe God would deliver them or he would bring the water, but instead they choose to turn away early. We all want control. We all want to hold the remote control, or maybe we all want to drive, or maybe if we don't want to drive, we want to actually make the passive-aggressive comments to the driver, or we want to make passive-aggressive comments to other people, thinking that they should change, or we want to manipulate them in one way or another, or maybe it's with sports teams. We wear certain items of clothing so that the team will win. We all want some element of control. We do this with God and idols too. Like God is this divine vending machine that if we push these buttons, we're going to get this out of it. And when we push these buttons and we don't get something out of it, we move to another vending machine. And that's what the Israelites did. In verse 18 of this chapter, it talks about how they went to Egypt and Assyria. They went to their idols. They went to their gods. And they went to them for protection instead of going to God. Because you can't control a spring of water. You can't say, I'm going to have a spring of water come up here. And you can't control God. But what you can do with the spring and with God is trust. Trust that there will always be water coming when you need it and how you need it. So instead of choosing trust, they chose control. And we do the same. Because with a spring, you never see a lot. You never get enough for a year's water. It's why Jesus, in the Lord's Prayer, he prays for our daily bread, not our yearly bread. Because it's an exercise of continuing to trust that God, the spring of living water, will not stop giving water. And when we do that, when we choose to trust him, it's also an opportunity for us to accept that we are finite beings, that we can't do anything ourselves, and we need to depend on God. Because you can't achieve your greatest longings. You can't achieve your greatest longings. That's idolatry. Going to anything or trying to do it all on your own is ways to find the meaning and popularity and love and safety from things that were never meant to do it. We go to these things over and over again and they won't satisfy us. In verse 11, the NIV translation says that my people have exchanged their glorious gods for worthless idols. But the actual Hebrew, when this was originally written, says that they've exchanged their glory for what is worthless. Now, our NIV translation adds glorious God for worthless idols, because that's what Jeremiah is implying. But his actual words are a little bit broader. And he's saying that they are exchanging it for what doesn't bring any profit. That makes it a little bit more real for you and for me. That so often in life, I try to seek things that won't bring profit. If you read the book of Ecclesiastes, it's an entire book talking about the things that he's gone through and tried to get for meaning and longing and purpose and joy and wealth and pleasure and all these things, how they don't bring profit. He calls them vanity, like a puff of smoke that's here now and gone. They won't give us the longing that we really want. It's kind of like cotton candy, where you know how you put cotton candy in your mouth and it tastes sweet for a second and then it's gone. And the only thing you really want is more cotton candy. You're wanting more and more, but over time it's not actually going to help you. It's not going to fulfill any deep nourishment in your body. It'll kill you. So often when we go to things that aren't God, they're not going to give us the nourishment that we want. They're only going to kill us over time. We do this in many ways, going to many different things for meaning and longing and satisfaction and pleasure. I think one of the ways that happens it most often is with TV shows. Like, how many times in the last week has somebody told you, oh, you have to watch this show? Like, our lives won't have meaning, or you won't be cool if you don't watch this show so you can talk about this or that. Sometimes it's not directly said, but it's implied in many ways. Now, I remember doing this with my wife, Kayla, one of the first times we met. She had never seen Indiana Jones. So one of our first dates was to watch Indiana Jones. Now, years later, I doubt she remembers anything that happened in that movie. And her life did not change in any significant way from watching that movie. Because again and again, it's a broken cistern. It's a worthless idol, that these things can't give us the longing that we truly want. Now, none of these things are bad, but idols are only good things that we make ultimate. Because God is the only ultimate thing, and he gives to us freely. Too often we turn to these idols when we don't need to. I don't know if you've read the book Huckleberry Finn. I'm about to ruin the book for you, so if you haven't read it, you may want to skip ahead, but it's over 40 years old, so I'm okay with spoiling it. First of all, I really didn't like the book, and I'll tell you why at the end. The story is about Huckleberry Finn and a black slave named Jim in the time of slavery in the States. And Huck Finn and Jim were running away to try to find freedom. And throughout the book, there's some really fun and crazy adventures that they get on, going into different towns so that they can try to escape and try to find freedom together. And they're moving from place to place, and they deceive, and they go on adventure, and there's danger, and there's hiding. And then at the end of the book, Jim gets caught, and he's put in this shed as a runaway slave. And they're going to have him tried, and then Huck is going to actually help him escape. But then Tom Sawyer comes along. And Tom Sawyer wants to create a story. He goes and he tries to tell them that you can't just escape. You have to make it as adventurous and dangerous as possible. So he did some pretty crazy things. Like, he made it so that he was putting poisonous snakes and scorpions in the shed with Jim just to make it more dangerous so the story was better. Or when they were going to escape, he actually alerted the authorities about the escape so that they'd be chased, and there's actually bullets flying, and Tom Sawyer actually ends up getting hit by a bullet. There's so many things that he tries to make the story better and better and greater and grander. This longing to be part of adventure in Tom Sawyer continues to happen. Until at the end, Jim gets caught again. And then Tom Sawyer comes along and says, he's actually been freed all along. See, before Jim ran away, his owner actually freed him. So the entire book was about him finding freedom, but he was free all along. I didn't like the book because it made the book seem pointless to me, that he was trying to achieve this longing in him that he had all along. But how true is that for us? When we try to create stories in our lives, whether it's something dumb like eating Denny's, or whether it's searching for meaning and purpose and joy and love in things that are broken cisterns, but only God can deliver. Because whether we dig a cistern or not, the spring is available. And God is our only true sustenance. As I said in verse 11, it's actually my people, when it says my people have exchanged their glorious God, it's actually they've exchanged their glory, Again, the God part's implied, but the ancient Hebrew actually says, we've exchanged our glory. Because throughout the Bible, it says that God has actually given us his glory. One of the times is when Jesus is praying for his disciples in John 17, 22. It says, I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one. God has given us his glory, his splendor, his riches, his majesty, that we get to receive it. We don't need to achieve it on our own because he gives it freely to us. Because your deepest longings can't be achieved. They can only be received. And God wants to give them to us fully. In Isaiah 58:11, Isaiah is another prophet, and he gives this analogy with water. He says, the Lord will guide you always. He'll satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose water never fail. Although we're in a sun-scorched land, although the world is broken and there's hurt and there's many longings in us, God is the only one who can satisfy. God is the only one who can defeat the idols that will not give us what we long for. Timothy Keller, in his book, Counterfeit Gods, he says this, Jesus must become more beautiful to your imagination, more attractive to your heart than your idol. That is what will replace your counterfeit gods. If you uproot the idol and fail to plant the love of Christ in its place, the idol will grow back. We can posture ourselves to drink from God's goodness, to see his beauty, and that his life-giving water is what we truly need. Whenever we're scared, whenever we're not sure what's next, whenever we're longing for achievement and fulfillment, these things are only found in God. Now, before I close, I want to give two warnings to you about, especially as we live in this consumeristic culture. First of all, we are not consumers, and God is not a commodity. We are worshipers, and God is gracious. God's not a commodity that we can come to and say, okay, I want fulfillment, so God, you owe me fulfillment. Because when we do this, we're not coming with grateful hearts of worship and praise and honor that he deserves. We're coming as entitled, like we are God, and he is our slave. But instead, if we come to him, like children coming to their loving papa, he gives to us graciously because he loves us and cares for us. It's not what we deserve, but he gives it to us because of his love, because of his goodness, not our achieving. And when we come this way, it causes us to worship him, not to become entitled and become gods on our own. Now, the second warning is that drinking water can be boring at times. Now, don't get me wrong, a glass of water can be really great on a really hot day when we're working hard and we're really thirsty. Water can be really great. But 99% of the time you drink water, you're not going, oh man, this water is so delicious. It's so great. I love this. Can't wait till my next drink of water. Sometimes this can happen spiritually too, where there's times of great fulfillment in drinking from the giver of life, the fountain of life, especially when we first find Jesus and experience his goodness and love. But lots of the time, it's not going to give us this emotional high experience every time we read our Bible. It might not. We might come to prayer and go like, God, I don't know what to say right now, or I don't even feel like praying. There might be times when we don't have all the answers. But the point of drinking water is not to have an emotionally high experience. It's to receive life in a sun-scorched land. That we can be well-watered gardens, that we can be an oasis to show others that they don't have to be sun-scorched. They don't have to go to broken cisterns. They don't have to go to worthless idols that won't profit them anything, but they can receive the goodness and glory and beauty of God himself. So I'm going to close with two questions. The first question, what broken cisterns do you go to? to help answer this question, maybe you can think about, what are some of your fears? What are your anxieties? What do you start thinking about a lot? Or what do you dream about a lot? What's your hopes and desires? Or finally, what do you get really emotional about? Now, some of these things, they may not be bad things. They may be really good things. But a cistern or a worthless idol is something that we've made ultimate, which is not supposed to be ultimate. Second question, how can you posture yourself to drink from God's fountain? How can you receive life from God this week? Again, this isn't something we achieve. It's not something that's like, okay, I'm gonna read my Bible and pray, and then when I do these things, then I can receive God's goodness. No, we get to do those things because there are ways that we can drink from the fountain of life. So maybe this week, you just wanna go for a 5-minute walk in the morning to thank God. Or at the end of the day, you could write down 3 things that you're thankful for. Or below this video in the description, there's some verses that you can meditate on. I'm gonna invite you actually to do that, to set a timer this week to meditate on those short scriptures. Not just read them and go about your day, but to stop, to ponder, and to receive the glory that God freely gives to you. Because we can't achieve our deepest longings, but God graciously gives them to us. I'm going to close by reading Isaiah 55, 1-2. And I invite you to ponder on this verse as the closing song that's about to be played. Come, all you who are thirsty. Come to the waters, and you who have no money. Come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why spend money on what is not bread and your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen to me. Eat what is good, and you will delight in the richest